Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Welcome to Your Family Dog podcast. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith and I'm here with Colleen Pilar. Hi, Colleen.
Hey, Julie.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about a dog for the kids. We have a very specific situation that I think you encountered this summer. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, this summer I was doing some private lessons with a very nice family. The family had adopted a dog named Coco, and he was about a five-month-old shepherdy lab, big, bouncy mix of everything. And Coco was specifically adopted to be Caroline's dog. In fact, Coco was a bit of a surprise to the dad. Mom and Caroline went out one day, picked up a dog, and came home. Guess
Ooh.
What? We got a dog.
And I bet Dad was thrilled.
Dad was less than thrilled. But he was willing to say, okay, it's Caroline's dog. Caroline will take care of it. This will be fine. Shortly thereafter, I was called because guess what? Coco was having house training accidents because nobody was watching Coco in the house. Coco was just wandering around the house, wetting everywhere, and Dad said, somebody needs to fix this. So they call and they ask me to come over, and I realized very, very quickly we've got some problems here. The first is that the parents were not on the same page at all with regard to Coco. The mom was like, yes, this is a great idea, and it's going to teach Caroline responsibility. And the dad was like, I don't know. She's not that responsible. It's a lot of work. I don't want to be in charge of a dog. Caroline herself, she was charming. I liked her a lot, but she was diagnosed with ADHD. So this wasn't me saying this is a kid who's distracted. This was her parents said that she had ADHD. So some of the appointments, she was focused and she would be really good at training Coco. And some of the appointments, she didn't want to come out of her room, or she was pinging around the living room one day, just, you know, throwing a paper ball, but she kept like crumpling up paper and flinging it. And it was really making her dad mad. And he said, we're going to get rid of this dog if you don't straighten up and start training. And I went, uh-oh.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. That is such a little red alarm for me, because I don't think a 9-year-old should be held fully responsible for whether or not we can keep this dog.
No, I don't either. I agree with you completely in that one.
It was a really tough thing because the dad hadn't signed up for this dog, and he was the one who really understood how much work was involved. The mom was into it, but her gut instincts for managing and supervising the puppy weren't all that good. And if I were choosing a dog for Caroline, I wouldn't have picked Coco. He really wasn't the match I would have liked to have seen with this little girl.
Would you say it's because he had more energy than what was necessary for this family? Or what was the issue there?
There were two issues. The first was he had more energy than they were really prepared for. But the second one was he wasn't very social. He did not have a very strong social drive. And Caroline's a 9-year-old girl. She wants to sit on the floor and hug her dog. So one day I was there, and she reached over and hugged him, and he moved away. And she reached over and hugged him again and pulled his body toward her, and he turned and snapped in the air. He didn't make any contact with her whatsoever. He just sort of went, knock that off. And she laughed. And I stopped the lesson. I'm like, did everybody just see that? That was a moment where Coco has really said, no, this is not working for me. And that's a big, big red flag for me.
That's a big one for me, too. And if I look for anything in a dog, the number one thing in a family dog for me is social drive to people.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's really non-negotiable with kids.
Absolutely.
Now, if you are adopting a dog to live with kids, you want the smushy, sweet, social, you know, oh, I love you kind of dog. And there's nothing wrong with Coco, but he wasn't that, which meant he wasn't a great choice to be a 9-year-old girl's dog.
Right.
So one of the big concerns I have all the time, because of course people talk to me all the time about kids and their dogs, is the idea of a dog for the kids. you know, should we get a dog for our kids? And my answer is no.
That's no. My answer too.
You should not get a dog
for the kids.
For your kids.
Just like we had talked about before, you should not get a dog for your dog. You should not get a dog for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, make sure it's the mom that really loves the dog.
Yeah.
My own gut instinct on that is, that's fine, you can get a family dog, but make sure you understand that the mom is probably going to be the one doing most of the work, so it has to really be a dog she loves.
I know, that feels so terribly sexist to me when I say it, but it has certainly been true in my experience. In fact, at All About Dogs, we have had a bunch of students come through where it is a mom with an adolescent crazy dog that her teenager brought home.
Yes.
So she's like, I never meet the kid. She's like, my son brought this dog home. That's amazing. I've seen you 18 classes in a row, and I've never met your son. Where's he? Oh, well, you know, he had homework tonight. Oh, okay. So I think that, you know, it's a family commitment. Every dog should be a family dog. That when we have, you know, there are certainly dogs who have preferred members of the family. That's fine. Like, I know in your family, you've talked about Emma's dog, Hudson, who lived in the house with everyone. But it was Emma's dog, you know. But if Emma was not available to take care of her dog, that family was there supporting Hudson every moment because it was a family dog.
Yes.
So in this case with Caroline and Coco, after the dad had made this threat, I had a heart-to-heart with them, the parents. I actually asked Caroline to go in another room, which was fine with her because she was not into training that day, which is why Dad was pulling out the threats, you know? He was frustrated. He was frustrated. I understood completely why he was saying what he was saying. But I said, look, you know, it is totally fair for there to be penalties for Caroline for not taking care of the responsibilities that she's assigned. But those penalties cannot be things that hurt her relationship with the dog if you are committed to keeping this dog. So if you don't feed the dog, we're going to get rid of the dog, or if you don't feed the dog, you're going to be in trouble for this or those kinds of things, that then makes her see Coco as this obligation and weight and all those things. So instead, we should be focusing on, you know, what are the things that she can do and how can we support her in doing them and how can we set up systems to make her succeed and really recognize this is our family dog that we have all communally chosen.
Correct.
And what can we do to make this better? And to their credit, the parents really did take this to heart. I was very, very pleased because I was concerned that we were perhaps heading toward a conversation about rehoming Coco, which was also fair if they were not going to be able to make the changes they needed to make. Because a 9-year-old girl with ADHD cannot be responsible for a dog. It cannot be her primary responsibility. And you know what? A 9-year-old girl without ADHD cannot.
That was going to be my point, too. Is one of the things is if you want to get a dog for your child and you want your child to take on all these responsibilities, you need to do an honest assessment of what your household is really like. Does your 9-year-old brush her teeth twice a day without being told? Does she always put her bike away when she comes home from riding her bike? Does she remember her lunch? Does she pack her lunch?
Yes.
Does, you know, are there certain, does she make her bed every day like she's supposed to? Does she set the table without being asked? And so if your daughter can do these things on her own, then I need to call you because your parenting skills are way, way beyond mine. But then you can consider getting her a dog and giving her more responsibility. But if your daughter or your son is just an average 9-year-old and has to be reminded to brush his teeth, has to be told to put his bike back in the garage, then it's not going to be fair to him to ask him to take on the responsibility of a sentient creature. If he can't take care of a bike, he can't take care of another creature in a consistent way. And realize that this has to be a family project, not just your son or daughter's project.
Right. And 9-year-olds are, well, all people of all ages are all over the board in terms of ability level. So a 9-year-old can do all those things without being reminded. A 9-year-old can do all those things with being reminded and do them well. And there are 9-year-olds who need to be reminded and need someone to follow up and check and make sure you actually did that job to the expectations that were required. Did you put your bike away? Yes, I did. Really? Is it on the porch? Yes, it is. Both wheels? Oh. You know? So,
yeah.
So,
did you brush your teeth?
Nine.
Yeah. All of them?
Mm-hmm.
No. Kinda. Maybe. Yeah.
No, and that's just life.
That is just life. And the other thing is I have found that oftentimes what I have is that people will get their somewhere, say, 7 to 11-year-old child, a retriever or a mm-hmm. shepherd mix or a golden doodle or,
right.
and not a mini golden doodle, like a big dog. And they expect this dog. And I had one family, they got a Newfie, which is not a small dog. You know, Newfoundlands are 125 pounds or more.
Yeah.
And then they expect the child, who weighs, 62 pounds, to take mm-hmm. this dog for a walk. And that is just a disaster waiting to happen. With one of my friends, the one who got the Newfie, they had their 10-year-old take their dog out for a walk, and it was in the winter, and it was icy. And the dog saw a squirrel and went charging after the squirrel. Well, there was no way, even on dry ground, that this child could have stopped this dog. So he was, like, skating behind this dog.
Right.
The squirrel ran up a tree, but the tree was icy, lost its footing, and fell off the tree right into the dog's mouth. So you had this instantaneous reward for chasing a squirrel. So now
yes.
the dog has learned, not only if I run really quickly and I get to the tree, squirrels fall out of the sky. So he's been
a very good thing.
Yes, which is a very good thing. So now I've been terribly well rewarded for this. So teaching this dog to not pull this child became even more difficult. If there'd been another parent or another person along with a second leash on that dog, this incident might not have happened. So I think you also have to realize that even a 40-pound dog has the pulling capacity to pull down a full-grown woman. What's he
yes.
going to do with a 40 to 60-pound child?
Right, and all of those things that we were just saying before about how responsible is your child and how well does your child handle things as they crop up come into play even more when we're talking about your child is now out of sight with a dog. So your child has walked up the block and around the corner and that squirrel comes out. You don't know if your dog is pulling your child into the street or if, you know, the dog is burrowing under a car to go after a cat or if some other person's dog has come running loose out of their yard and your child is now holding your dog on leash, what is the right choice to make in these moments? So that's a lot of on-the-spot adult thinking that we are expecting of children out walking dogs. It's a very challenging thing.
It is a very challenging thing, and I think that that's something you need to realize, that if your child is under a certain age, and even teenagers have a hard time with this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know lots of adults who don't know what to do when another dog comes running at them. It's
right.
a scary thing. So I think you need to remember that that dog cannot be walked alone by a child. So do you have the willingness and the time to invest in walking your dog 2 or 3 times a day with your child using 2 leashes, one for you and one for him? So
right.
that's something you need to think about seriously because the dog's going to need exercise. Or think about what's another solution. Can this child effectively play ball with the dog in the backyard as a way of having exercise mm-hmm. or interacting with the dog? Is the dog calm enough and trained well enough that we can have a successful game of fetch? Because if the dog's not trained well, that could also end up being a disaster for your child.
Right. And that's a problem, too, because so many adolescent dogs have these bouts of enthusiasm that include jumping on someone or you know, grabbing or some of those things that, again, a child may not be prepared to deal with in that moment. So an adult
right.
needs to be there supervising and training the dog to get through these stages so that we then have nice play behavior between the child and the dog.
And even if you have a teenager and they bring home the dog like your client did, or you decide, well, I really think that we need to get a family dog now because the kids are old enough to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a problem, too, because most teenagers these days have innumerable after-school events.
Right.
If they're on track team or they play football or whatever, they may not be home in time to walk the dog or
right.
to feed the dog. Or maybe there's, you know, track meets on Saturday. I'm gone all day Saturday, and you're gone to the meet, too. Is the dog really going to have the family time that he needs if you've got really busy teenagers? And also to remember that once the teenager graduates from high school and perhaps goes off to college, it's your dog.
Yes.
It's your dog. Not your child's dog. Maybe your child's home dog when they're home for Thanksgiving, but it's your dog now.
That happened in my own life, that I was a teenager when our family dog was getting rather old, and the thought of being dogless was not going well. So I did convince my mom that it was much better to get a companion dog for our dog than a replacement dog after our dog died. And my mother, who loves me, did indeed get a puppy when I was just shy of 16 years old. So I lived in that house with that with Lucky. Her name was Lucky for the next 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucky lived to be 14 years old. So I was home from college for vacations and things. But Lucky never lived in my adult house. Lucky was my mother's dog. And wasn't my mother lovely to to do that? Because it really was our family dog. And Lucky was wonderful that way. But my mother probably had a much better idea when she was getting this dog, and as her child is just shy of 16, that the next 10 to 14 years of her life were going to be dog related, and that the next 10 to 14 years of my life were not. I didn't see it that way at all. I couldn't even imagine going to college and not having a dog. Like, honestly, that was the hardest part of college for me, was 4 years, no dog. This is bad.
Well, which is a great place if you want to socialize your puppy. Take him to a college campus because everybody wants to see your dog.
Yes, but that was not a good experience for me in college because I didn't like how people treated their dogs. So I would go places and dogs had horrible names that were funny little frat boy names. One I'm thinking of in this moment is absolutely not repeatable to be on a clean podcast. And they were like, ha 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 ha, ha, that's his name. And I went off. I was like, that's not nice. That's not cool. And these people were not being responsible with their dogs in a way that would be appropriate. So that's sort of a slightly different conversation. That's not a dog for the kids. That's a dog for the not yet adult who think they are adults.
Correct. And that is a whole other podcast.
But that is a whole other podcast.
But in some ways it is directly related because you need to be asking the same questions.
You do.
Am I responsible enough at this point in my life to bring a dog into it? Can I be consistent in my care, consistent in my training? Can I give him the time he needs? And that's something that families have to ask themselves, regardless the age of their children, whether their kids are in elementary school, junior high, high school, or beyond. You know,
and can I make this a long-term commitment? So even if I see that for the next year I can totally do this, do I really envision that the year after I can, and the year after, and the year after?
That's right, because this is probably a minimum of a 10-year commitment.
Yeah.
And so even if your kids are 7 or 9 when you get them, they will still be out of the house before the dog.
Yeah.
So you need to understand that this really is a family dog. So I think those questions are really important, is do you have to honestly assess how responsible are we as a whole? And it's not necessarily saying I'm saying you're irresponsible, but does your lifestyle conform to the responsibility necessary to have a happy family dog in your life? Because if the dog's not happy, you're not going to be happy either.
Right. And I think people often talk about, I often see that for some of the more active dogs, the phrase used would be like, this would be a good dog for an active family. And when people describe their family as active, they usually mean they're out of the house doing an organized activity. So before, when you were talking about how busy teens are, a lot of times moms are driving those teens and tweens back and forth to practice. I mean, you're taking your 5th grader to soccer practice, and you're taking your 7th grader to soccer practice, and you're probably taking your 9th grader to soccer practice. And by the time they're in 10th grade, you're debating whether you trust them enough to take the car. Nope, I'll take you to soccer practice. So that's a lot of time that we're looking at. That's that busy, busy dog is, you know, they'll enjoy the carpool, but not as much as they'd really enjoy a good hike.
Right.
So when we're describing activity level, we need to be thinking of it from the dog's perspective. Do the activities of your family's life lend themselves to having a dog come along? I'm working with a client right now who has some boys who play baseball, and their dog is not really a huge fan of going to the ballpark because he's not entirely comfortable with all those strangers. Well, you know, that could be an appropriate thing for many dogs. It's not really a great one for this dog.
Right.
And so they're not bringing him to practice. But they would have liked to. They brought a previous dog to practice, but that's not working right now for this dog.
And so then, right, and that becomes an issue because now you begin to feel guilty because I'm not spending enough time with the dog and he can't join in our activities. That's really hard. It's right. hard for the family. So then you need to think in terms of, well, perhaps there's something I can either give up or I can turn around so that I can spend more time with the dog. Is there some place in my day that I can give a half an hour to the dog? And that becomes very hard if you've got two working parents as well.
Yes. So those questions come into, the dog that you choose and whether you even want a dog. So mm-hmm. in this case, this family absolutely wanted a dog, but maybe the one they chose wasn't necessarily the one that would have been the easiest fit for the lifestyle they have.
Right.
And we will go into how to choose the right dog for your lifestyle in a future podcast, but that's a huge topic and who knows how long. That will be the 5-hour episode. go on and on.
That's right. Or maybe that could be, like one of 22 in a series of how to choose a dog. But one of the other things I wanted to think about is if you do decide, okay, we do have a lifestyle in which we want to add a dog and we think we can do it, ask yourself, how can you take care of these things that your dog needs, like being fed? So one of the things you might be able to think about, if you've got more than one child who's at an age of responsibility, say 7, 9 or above, maybe you set up a rotation, a chart mm-hmm. even. Put up a chart in your kitchen that shows what day and, whether, Johnny feeds the dog on Wednesday morning and Jennifer feeds him on Wednesday evening, then they are feeding buddies. So if Joey can't do it in the morning, Jennifer does it, he will take Jennifer's in the afternoon. So if you have a chart where people have to actually check it off,
yeah,
then that's going to help because nobody wants to see the slot that their name is in with no check mark on it. So right. that will help to improve, I think, consistency is actually setting up a chart where everybody has to do what they do. And if they can't, then they go to their buddy on the chart and say, can we switch on a particular kid?
And the chart is nice for the mom, too, because it's easy for her to just glance then and say, dog has been fed. I can see the check mark. The dog, it's done. As opposed to I have to ask, did you feed the dog? Today's your day. That kind of thing. So having some sort of tracking system can be very, very helpful for families.
Yeah, I think so. And then it also, too, then it makes sure that the people get engaged with the dog. Mm-hmm. You've got a chart. You got to check it off. You got to get engaged with the dog. The other thing that I have a new family I'm going to be seeing in a couple of weeks just called me, and they've got a golden retriever. And he's a great dog, except he pulls on lead, he jumps on guests, and he doesn't come when he's called.
And
Other than that, he's a great dog. And I'm like, those are all very remediable things. And they've got 3 kids.
And totally normal things, too.
Totally, that's what I said. That's totally normal. We can take care of all 3 of those things. And they have 3 kids, 7, 9, and 14, or 15. And we are meeting at 7 o'clock in the evening so that the entire family can be there. So the son can get home from football practice so that everybody's on the same page as to how to train this dog. And I think that's really important is to think about the consistency with which you all train and that you all are committed to training in the same way.
Yeah.
And that means
lot of really good positive reinforcement trainers who have group classes welcome children.
Absolutely.
So there are people who don't like children in class, but I think it's worth hunting around to find a trainer who's welcoming and says, yes, bring your kids, because we do want everybody on the same page. We want the kids to see how to communicate with the dog and not have a trickle-down theory where you're trying to explain, well, in class we did it this way. Get kids in. Kids are great trainers.
Oh, they are. Absolutely. In fact, that's what I told him. He said, well, they've already taught him how to sit and roll over, and I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Great. Then they're right on board. But I have found that too, is that if I work just with the parents and then we meet as a family and I'm like, wow, that's not actually what I said, but okay, we'll go with the flow here. So to have everybody there, at least at the initial consult, so they understand what it is we're doing and why we're doing it, makes it a lot easier to get compliance.
Yeah. Yeah. Having everybody involved is really helpful. And people don't have to be, especially in private lessons when schedules, those people are typically choosing it based on schedule issues, the schedules do make it hard to get everybody there. But if we can have everybody at least sometimes, even if it just means I have dad and the kids this time and mom and the kids that time, or, you know,
right,
we're at least getting all the information to everyone. It is more challenging when someone can't participate at all in the training.
It is. And it makes it much harder, because then what happens is, say the two younger kids have been in training and the older kid tries something and then they're bossing their older brother, and
right,
it's just, it sets up for family discord. But the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that one of the things that I will do, I've had families contact me, can you help me find a dog? And that's another thing to consider, is if you're not sure about what kind of dog, or even if you should get a dog, find a good positive reinforcement trainer. Any good one will be able to sit down with you and say, let's talk about what you're looking for in a dog. Let's talk about what you want to do with the dog. What is it that you want to, how do you want to spend time with your dog? And help steer you towards the right dog for your family, or maybe towards a cat, because maybe that's going to just meld in with your family better.
And you know what? Whatever you pay for that private lesson or consultation is so worth it over the next 10 years. Because going back to Caroline and Coco, if this family had decided in advance, we really think a dog would be a great idea for Caroline, I would have loved to have helped them find a different dog. Coco is a better fit for a different family than this one.
Right.
So helping them find a dog that's a nice fit for their family, whatever the trainer charges you, that money is so well spent. And trainers will be so excited to have somebody who's thinking ahead, because most people don't. They fall in love with a cute face, and God bless them, they are so cute. But sometimes sometimes that cute face comes with all sorts of behaviors you were not bargaining for.
That's absolutely true. And in fact, I have one of my blogs is called Beauty is Only Fur Deep.
Yes.
And we'll put a link to that on. I talk about that very thing. I worked with a family who contacted me about getting a dog, and she went and had us take a look at this litter of cockapoos or schnoodle dogs or some such thing. And one of them was absolutely adorable, but extraordinarily aloof.
Yeah.
Wasn't really interested in talking to the kids or anything else. The other one had mottled kind of fur and a longer nose, but he went and went, oh, peoples, I love little peoples. And he went over and curled up in their laps.
Yes.
When they tossed a toy, he'd run and get it and bring it right back and drop it to them. You know, when they petted him, he leaned. Emma and I, my younger daughter, went with me. And we were just like, you have to get this dog.
Mm-hmm.
This is an absolute perfect family dog. And if we didn't already have three dogs, we'd be taking this dog home. And needless to say, she didn't like his looks and said no.
Oh.
And I was devastated. But she took to heart what we said. And at the next litter dog she looked at, she did find one who was a fine little family dog. So she at least took it to heart. But she really wanted both looks and temperament.
Yeah. And that's so funny, because you will fall in love with the looks of your dog if you love their temperament. In fact, the dog I currently have, Edzo, I remember the day I met him. He came in for an evaluation at our office. I came in late because I wasn't a part of that initial appointment. So I was coming in for the next one. I walked in the room and I thought, huh, that's a funny looking dog. I remember that feeling. I remember thinking, that's a funny looking dog. That is the cutest dog in the whole world. I adore this dog. I can't imagine I ever thought he was funny looking. But the reality is, my initial impression of him was not, oh my goodness, that is one good looking dog. That's not what I thought. And you know what? He probably didn't look at me and go, wow, that is one good looking person. But we did fall in love with each other's personalities, and that's what counts. So if people can just get to that point, it doesn't matter what your dog looks like, because you are going to think that's the cutest dog in the world if it has a nice temperament for your family.
Absolutely. Temperament
I
trumps
guarantee
looks.
It.
Yes. Temperament trumps look every single time. But that's getting a little bit ahead of the game. But it's still important to consider, too, is what is the temperament of a dog that you want? What are
right.
you looking for as far as personality in a dog? Do you want one that tends to be a little bit more laid back? Do you want one that's really energetic? These are all questions you need to ask yourself about what you want in a dog, and how would those features of a dog fit into your family. And a trainer can help you make those decisions and find the right dog for your family.
Yeah. So if you're thinking, should we get a dog for the kids? It sounds like you should really just sit down and take some time to think through these questions and then really consider whether you should get a trainer involved and talk through it with someone who has some expertise about behavior and see what would be the best fit for your family. Because you and I, we totally believe that life is better with a dog.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But it's got to be the dog that fits your life. And so finding that match is the key.
I think so, too. So I think that wraps it up for this week, Colleen.
I think it does. It was nice talking to you about our very favorite subject, dogs.
Right. And if you have any comments on dogs or questions, we love getting questions and comments. You can check out our website, www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com, or you can call us at 614-349-1661. Thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
Have you visited our website lately? In addition to our previous episodes, we also have a list of resources that you and your dog may enjoy. Check it out at yourfamilydogpodcast.com.